Hey everyone, I'm Mark Kesper. Welcome to the No Spoiler Reviews podcast, where today I'm going to be interviewing up-and-coming filmmaker Alejandro Montoya Marin, whose dark comedy The Wrong Guy has been officially selected for the Dances with Film Festival in Hollywood. Hey Alejandro, how's it going?
Nice to meet you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Likewise, so how did you get bitten by the filmmaking bug?
When I was three and my mom took me to go see a Spanish animated film called Gati la Oruga.
What's that film about? I haven't seen that one.
It's kind of like a fairy tale, and it's about a little worm that wants to become a butterfly, and it's the whole process of her going through the garden and then finding friends, and then she becomes a teen, and then it's very good for kids. And I remember seeing that on the big screen and I know that was 3 years old, because when I told my mom, like, hey, when we saw Gati la Oruga, when was that? She's like, you remember that?
You did well. My parents took me to Bambi and it scared me shitless, so there you go.
Hey, they weren't always home runs, but you know what the best double feature I've ever had, besides Grindhouse and you know, I've had others?
Go for it.
When I was, I think, eight, my uncle, I stayed with my uncle, and he's like, hey man, I have a date and I want to take her to the movies. So you're coming with me, and you're sitting away from me. And we watched, and I said, okay, but I want to watch RoboCop.
Nice.
So I saw RoboCop, and then at 8 years old, which I shouldn't have, and then the bellboy or the valet or whatever.
Yeah.
Comes in and he goes, this is a double feature, everyone. The next movie is going to be an Italian drama called Cinema Paradiso. And it just starts.
Wow.
And I swear to God. And I didn't know how to read then, like Spanish and English. Like I was like still reading kind of at an average level, both. But I don't know, man. It was so enchanting.
Oh, it's an incredible film. I mean, it's one of those films that kind of documents the birth of cinema.
One of the best films.
I mean, yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah.
So what's the outline for The Wrong Guy for the people who are not familiar with it?
The Wrong Guy follows the story of Daniel, who is a delusional suburban father of two and assistant manager at a regional bank, who inflicts revenge at anyone who double crosses him, not knowing that he's finally taken revenge to an ex FBI agent who's like way harder than he is.
How can I put it? I mean, Daniel seems to have a very itchy trigger finger. It really doesn't take much to set him off, even when it's not necessary.
Yeah, but his matters of revenge are like we did probably hotter shit than when we were 12.
So how did you go about the casting process?
Well, John Kaler and I met at South By, and we've been working. He helped us work on Millennium Bugs, and we did a couple of short films with him. I felt like during the pandemic, as filmmakers, we all immediately were like, let's talk about dark and very depressing. And I don't know, man, I don't think we need it. So I want, even though the movie's dark, I wanted it to be funny.
Okay.
I don't want people to sit down and you go through all the blocks of short films that are the same, you know, like, oh, I mean, cancer, and I get it, you know, like I understand, but we're not reinventing the wheel, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We just want people to have a good time, Mark. That's it.
Okay, so how do you know where the line is between dark or too dark?
I don't know. I think it's when we watch so that we just go, oh, that's too much.
Sure, but by that time, the money's spent and there's no way back.
Oh, that's true. I feel like I don't know. That's a great point. I think I mean, I'm not going to have anything that's not, as long as, like South Park. I feel like South Park pokes at everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good thing. It's a good thing to poke at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's a malicious way of doing it. And I don't think any of my things are malicious.
Mm.
I mean,
no, I mean, like, I guess at the other end of the spectrum would be something like Hobo with a Shotgun,
yeah,
which is a movie that you kind of have to be prepared for the fact that he's going to jump off the diving board, saw it in half, and take it with him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's that kind of film.
We want it. I mean, like that's, I wanted people to laugh, but also like, I wanted the character, as stupid as he is, to have like a real sense of danger,
mm-hmm,
you know, like even though he's not really, no one's really the good guy. That's what I love. I was watching The Hateful Eight a couple of days ago, and I was like, that's what I love about this movie. Everyone's flawed. And I think that that's a great thing. I hate these, like all these new shows. Everyone's so squeaky clean, or it's like very custom, like, oh, I drink, so now I'm bad. No.
Is there now real commercial pressure to be really squeaky clean, to deliver really squeaky clean characters?
Oh, whoa.
Because like from the 2000s forwards, there seemed to be this appetite for flawed yet relatable characters, as typified, say, by Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yes, there is. Like my second feature film, Millennium Bugs, a lot of the... it's about two best friends, right? And one of them just happens to be gay and the other one's a first-gen Latino. And they would get upset because they were like, well, we don't like it that they don't end up together. I'm like, but why? What they're needing from each other is she's an orphan and she was rich. And he's like, his parents are putting him like, hey, because you're first-gen and we're doing all this shit, you have to get into Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's like the different pressures of her gang. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to drink. He can relate to. And then his, hey, man, it's good to be responsible and care about other people. She learns from him. So it was really sad when people are like, oh, they don't end up together. Audiences don't like that because they feel fooled. And I'm like, I don't know. I've had many conversations, but what do I know, man? They run one of the best stations of TV ever.
Mm-hmm. But there's the question. Are you making films for an audience or are you making films for you? In a sense that you're making the film that you want to see and maybe there's an appetite beyond.
I as a filmmaker, I think that's one of the reasons why you see that there's a whole, even to stories that have already been told, there's a different perspective that you haven't seen and influences and the way you live life can infiltrate and influence the kind of movies and snap and cuts and music and swells that you do. So yeah, no, I think that I've heard it for years. I think it's movies that I would like to see, but I know that I'm not the only one because then it sounds like ultra selfish. Like I as a filmmaker and as an artist, I think that you have to put yourself away and be like, are you fueling your own ego or is this, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure. I mean, I'm fairly sure that Stanley Kubrick wasn't making films for the market.
No. But he was, but I mean, nah, man, but he was.
He was just out there. He was just being himself, being Stanley.
See, he could do whatever he wants, man, you know?
For sure. I mean, there is this kind of plateau beyond which you just kind of do your thing and your audience will come with you.
I just want one. I just want to leave one movie that people remember. That's it.
That's fair. So, like, which movie has had the biggest influence on your career and why?
That's too tough because you can't name one. It's multiple.
Okay. I'll stretch to two.
It's gonna be multiple. Mariachi was one, obviously. We talked about this. Mariachi because it made me feel good that a kid from fucking the south of Texas was doing that because I'm from Laredo. I think he's from San Antonio. So that was cool. The second was, as a Latino, it's very scary to watch something because if it's made by a Latino, you're hoping it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Because then if you don't like it, you have to lie. Because then if you don't like it, you're like, oh, how dare you not support your people? It's like, I didn't like, hey, dude, where's my car? And I like Stoner comedies. Like,
yeah.
I thought it was way too stupid, you know? So no, it felt really good. And Mariachi showed that the creativity is a huge element of what you're doing and to be proud of like where you're from,
mm-hmm.
From Mexico. And you know, like that's a huge part. You have no idea how many people I meet that try to hide the fact that they're Latino. And they're like, no, my name is James.
Wow.
Your name is Jaime, motherfucker. You know, but it's cool. Hey, to some people, maybe they haven't been to the country and they just see the shit that CNN does.
But how long do you think it's going to take before, like, that issue is dealt with?
Oh,
I mean, certainly in the realms of entertainment. Because if, like, entertainment is projecting culture...
In what aspects of a marketing issue? This is a great question, by the way.
In the sense that there should be no presumed negative to a Latino movie versus any other kind of movie.
No, I think it's... we can't do that. We can't dictate what people think. We could only put art and maybe hopefully they see things differently. So then they come back to the second one. Like, I can't tell you don't like this movie because why not? I think we just keep creating.
But isn't it the case that then an audience will fall in love with a particular actor or filmmaker and then suddenly they become the vanguard? they become the ones who hold the door open for other people to walk through?
I don't think it should, because, well, first of all, it can't be just one filmmaker that inspires you. Like, there's a sea. I mean, to me, there's a sea of a film. Like, I don't just like comedy. I can, as much as I love The Naked Gun, I can sit down and I can debate like camera analyzation and movement and arcs for The Godfather or fucking Half, or, you know, like I know the classics. I watch 8 and a half twice, and I've seen, you know, Jerry Maguire 50, because I like popcorn, man. I like it.
Yeah, sure. As a personal response.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, man. I think it's going to take more time. I think with more good product, we can't just put product and have people like, that's it, but we put 50 movies. You're supposed to love them. No. Now make those fucking 50 movies, pick 5 that are going to change culture. It's different. It's a different animal. And I think we're very impatient.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have hope, man, because it's really cool to see like the young, like, dude, this is really heart to heart. The younger generation kind of like I've gotten on the phone with people that like want me to mentor them. And I tell them, why? I haven't achieved shit. What do you want me to tell you? I haven't figured it out. But you start seeing things and you're like, there is a younger generation that wants to do good shit, and they are willing to hear and listen and learn. And that's cool, man. So it's like, there is hope. I just don't know till when.
Sure. But it seems to me that the distribution model itself is actually changing. And that in itself seems to be helping representation, in the sense that everyone doesn't have to go through the same narrow doors of only a handful of studios.
Correct. The problem with that is that some of these younger distribution companies don't have enough money for marketing.
Right.
Well, the content's there, but how do you point people there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it.
It's little issues.
Yeah, just like a small issue. So who's like your storytelling hero? Who's the guy or gal that you look up to and think, yeah?
Tarantino.
Okay, so Tarantino. What is it about Tarantino that makes him special for you?
He's a great writer. He's great at pace.
Mm-hmm.
He's great at timing.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Ramsey, I like her. I think she's the same, only now she goes, okay, well, how do we not shoot it traditionally?
That's a great shout.
She's great. She's fucking great. Spielberg. Scorsese, Jesus, Ray Liotta passed away today. That sucks.
Oh no!
Did you hear that?
No. I mean, wow, that's really caught me.
Yeah, dude,
sideways.
Just passed away. They just started announcing it like 30 minutes ago. I mean, there's no good thing about this, but at least the man died in his sleep, and that's pretty baller.
Well, there's something to be said for that. But wow, what an amazing legacy and a collection of films he's left us with.
Yeah, man. Remember Narc?
I have to confess, I haven't seen Narc. That's one of the films of his I haven't seen.
You have to watch it now because he passed away, dude. I think he should have been nominated for that movie.
Okay, so that's the one. That's the missing gem.
I think so, man, honestly. I mean, he's done so many. Like, I just watched Youth and Revolt, and I forgot he was in it, and he was cracking me up. He's great.
I mean, as much as everybody goes on about that infamous scene with Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, you have to remember that Ray Liotta was opposite him, and it was his reactions and the quality of his reactions that were really making the scene. And in like a lot of these memorable kind of film moments, it's a dance between two performers, and the whole validity, the whole authenticity of the moment is reliant upon the pair of them working together. And as much as Joe Pesci gets all the attention, I think Ray Liotta was more than an equal participant in that.
It's like he had he was too young when he did his big masterpiece, but I mean, he still had, I thought he was fantastic in Copland.
Yes.
I thought he was a lot of fun in No Escape. Remember that movie where he's in the island? That's so much fun. Like,
yeah,
like a jungle Mad Max, whatever, prison. Battle Royale, Copland and Narc and Observe and Report. He was cracking me up.
Wow. Well, he will be sorely, sorely missed.
Yeah. Sorry I brought the food down.
So, like, lastly, because I'm a huge, huge Smiths fan, how is it that you got Andy Rourke to do the music for your film?
Oh, dude.
There's got to be a story here.
It's my music supervisor sat next to someone at the Roosevelt Hotel and they started talking. And then he's like, oh yeah, I represent Andy Rourke. And he goes, from the fucking Smiths, like that. And she goes, yeah. So he called. No, he still has the audacity. Hey, do you know this? But I'm like, come on, bro. Yes, of course. So it was just conversations, and obviously, like, trying to pitch him that, hey, you should do this stupid little short film.
Exactly.
For people that are nowhere, like, close to your category. And he very, very positive and very, like, he liked that, you know, we were, you know, he's very quiet. He's very chill. And I'm very, I feel like it's, because when he talks, I definitely pay attention and listen. And then he likes, I don't know that.
For sure.
I don't know. I guess the energy. So we showed him the movie and he was like, this is ridiculously fun. It's so ridiculous. It's fun. So he just did it. And it was great, man. It was great working with him. We've texted a couple of times and he's already like, hey, just tell me when. And I'm down to hang out and like work together again. So that's better than anything. Just someone that you admire, like, actually doesn't think that you're a putz when you do art.
That's cool. That's perfect.
I have nothing but admiration and positive shit to say about the people that I've admired, from Robert to Del Toro to Cuaron.
Holy hell.
To Eva Longoria, Matt Walsh. Like, the list goes on, man.
But isn't that like the big fear? They're like, don't meet your heroes.
I haven't had anyone be rude to me. Like, I got lucky.
That's good. That's really, really good to hear, actually. Okay. And so lastly, what is the one killer piece of advice that you would give to any other filmmakers out there?
It's going to take a while. I'm being patient. It took me 10 years to realize that, because I've, just like a way I'm seeing right now, when I was 31, I would throw my, I'm done. That's it. I fucking had it. And then I'd watch Goodfellas or something and then just be taken by the inspiration of like, hey, man. But the fact that, what if you make something this good?
Okay.
Because that's it, man. I've realized, like, my expectations, and it's not my expectations. I feel like my goals have shifted. And I always thought that anyone who said that was weak or trying to accept some sort of failure. But now it's like, I don't have to be, I've never wanted to be Spielberg, because there's only one motherfucker.
I wouldn't worry so much about that. I mean, cast your mind back to Ridley Scott. I mean, like, he did his first film in his 40s. And like, age is no indicator of talent.
I mean, but when I appreciate that, but motherfucker did Alien. Oof.
And something for us all to aim for.
I got a Blade Runner one right there. That's from his. I love that movie.
Yeah, top movie. Top movie. I saw that movie when it first came out. I was watching it on videotape and I couldn't make head nor tail out of it. And yet, with the music, with the acting, with the production design, it just really just had something. It just had something that just kept me coming back. And yeah, I mean, wow, what a payoff.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, I'm with you. I went through, when I was young, I've always been a huge Harrison Ford fan.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid and everyone was watching fucking like Friday, I was watching the Patriot games. I love the Patriot games. Fucking Jack Ryan, homie.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got like Gary Oldman, you know, Britain's finest, doing an amazing Russian accent opposite him.
Wait.
I mean, hey, you know?
Wait, when? In Wind Talker?
No, you know, the one where he's on the plane, you know?
Oh, that's Air Force One.
Oh, no, that's Air Force One. Which, yeah, well done.
I adore. And Gary Oldman, he's such a bombastic villain, but.
I love it. I mean, love it. I mean, the stuff that he did in the Luc Besson films is just so gloriously outrageous.
They're great, dude.
I mean, like, you know, he was kind of honoring this work debt with Luc Besson, but. When you look at the performances, when you look at Stansfield, and you just kind of go, where in your head did you pull this amount of genius? Because.
Oh, it's fantastic. Get in the house. And as a kid, man, I remember that as a kid, that shot of, I mean, it's a little theatrical, but he's, I feel that when he embraces it and he doesn't cut loose, like he doesn't stop, he goes with it. No, yeah, that shot of him with, and he cracks the little pill up here.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the one where he's got the metal rod behind his neck to keep his neck steady for that shot. And yet, it's funny, it's kind of like, you know, a movie that you love so much, it's kind of like your favorite album, there's a track that you adore, and yet as time goes by, your allegiances change and there's another track that takes its place. And that scene when he's just hidden behind the bathroom door and Matilda comes through with the takeaway delivery is like, whoa, super, super creepy. I mean, you know, sorry, Miss Hopkins and everybody, you can just take a bow at that point.
Yeah, because you don't know what he's going to do. He just murdered a family. It's a great movie. And I was showing you my tattoo. I have a tattoo of The Professional because I love that movie.
Good man.
It's got one of my favorite shots is that dolly track after he says, this is for Matilda. And then he looks at the bomb and then we reverse on Gary Oldman. He goes like, oh my, or oh shit or whatever. And then the dolly.
Yeah.
That shot. God damn.
And also a little side note, they freely admit they used far more explosive than they meant to. I mean, I don't know how much explosive they were planning on using, but it was like twice the amount. So, you know, when you get that like explosion, it really took everybody by shock.
Yeah. And that's why it's so iconic. Damn. I don't know.
A bit like The Dark Knight when Heath Ledger's walking away from the hospital complex and he's stabbing on the button saying, why isn't this working? And then you suddenly get that impromptu reaction shot where he's still in character and still goes with it. And it's just, yeah, genius and magical scenes that you never forget.
It was great that he was like, he immediately clicked to like, just keep going.
Yeah. No.
Instead of like, oh, what do I do?
So like, what's next for you? What are you going to keep going with?
I want The Wrong Guy, obviously tour The Wrong Guy to hopefully see if it has any potential as a feature film, but we just finished another short film called Demo and we're starting another one called Chicken by the end of this month, by June. At the end of June, we're shooting another one and hopefully another feature film very, very soon, but maybe by the end of this year. I'm still working on the script, so I'm not going to rush it if the script's not ready, but it's almost
there. Wow. Well, I mean, yeah, that's inspiring.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thank you. I have to or else what are we going to do?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Alejandro, and I really wish you the best for 2022.
Thank you, Mark. Hopefully it's not the last time, man. Really nice to meet you.
Likewise. All the best. So there you have it. I hope you like what you heard, and if you fancy having some more No Spoiler interviews delivered to your favorite listening device, then please consider subscribing. So if that's your kind of thing and you don't like knowing the ending before you start, then I look forward to you joining us for even more interviews and reviews.